Welcome to the Trust Your Gut podcast with Erica Smith and Nicole Carter. In this show, we'll be sharing with you everything we've learned about gut health and everything that you can do to make it better. We'll be sharing our stories from personal experiences, client success stories, as well as the new and relevant science to gut health. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to Trust Your Gut podcast with Nicole and I. We have another amazing guest on our show today. And this one hits a little bit what we're dealing with in real life. So I am super excited for her to talk about this topic and also link it back to gut health and even weight loss. I'm going to have Nicole introduce our guest today. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for tuning in again today. Every time I research people to find, you know, who would be great resources to talk more about gut health, I'm just amazed at who's out there. And especially when you look on social media and Instagram, it's a great place to find really cool, accomplished, educated people that are focusing on this. And today we have a great example of that with Dr. Christine Bishara. She has got over 20 years of clinical experience working with disease prevention and management. Her therapy involves multidimensional and a personalized approach to addressing multiple physical and biological factors while focusing on strengthening the body's immune system. So this includes assessment of individuals' gut health, determination of antioxidant levels, and determination of neurotransmitter deficiencies. So we're really excited to have you here today, Dr. Bishara. There's so much more that I wanna tell people about your website, but we'll make sure we point them to that in our discussion today. But thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to speaking with you guys.
So you have got quite a litany of work here. You were You published the first scientific article linking gut flora to imbalances in COVID-19. I bet that was pretty amazing. Did you get some good feedback on that?
Yes and no. It kind of came at the height of the pandemic. And it was really almost this epiphany that just kind of stumbled on, my lap. I can give you a little bit of background on that. Let's start talking, or unless you want me to do it now.
Yeah. Why don't you maybe to start us off, give listeners a little bit of background on yourself and kind of how you came into this work.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, my background is in internal medicine, and I've practiced internal medicine for 20 years. I've done literally the gamut, including inpatient preceptor work, outpatient clinical work as well. And most recently, I decided to open my own practice because what I was seeing in my work as an internist was that so many of my patients had all these chronic medical conditions, and yet nutrition and prevention was really lacking in how we approach their treatment protocol. And unfortunately, we really didn't have enough time to address any of these nutritional issues or deficiencies. And so being someone who was overweight when I was younger and knowing how much that impacted me losing the weight, not only physically, but mentally as well, I really felt like it was my mission and my passion to devote my future career into helping everyone else really feel and look their best. And if that includes weight loss or just, you know, overall wellness and just health for their future, then that's what my goal was. And so that's how my practice came about a few years ago. Unfortunately, then COVID hit. and then my practice was considered non-essential here in New York City. So it was closed. Wow. Yeah. Temporarily while,
interesting.
Yeah.
Health is non-essential. Is that what I just heard?
Well, I think at the time, like right in the beginning, they basically closed any non-essential medical practices where there wasn't focus on treating COVID, in an inpatient setting. So that's what happened. And the odd thing was my husband's a pulmonologist intensivist. So he's, you know, always covering the ICU basically. And so he got kind of like the opposite effect, where, you know, he was like all of a sudden they were requiring them to do like 24-hour coverage for the ICU. So his schedule kind of, you know, just like completely did a 360.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So, but interestingly enough, like the two of us kind of came up with this discovery, based on what he was seeing in his ICU. We could talk a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to double back for a second because you touched on something interesting, which is what I see. So I've been a health educator and working in the healthcare field for about 18 years. And the one thing that I've seen, especially just in the last maybe 5 years of doing population health management, is that there isn't really a lot of room in the medical system for prevention or wellness. Physicians just simply don't have the time. And I don't know that they actually have the skill, to be quite honest, or the knowledge, but they don't have that ability to give their patients the time needed to address behavior change, nutrition, and all of these things that you do. So is that how you kind of found the need for what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you completely. And it's not a lack of want. I think a lot of physicians want to help their patients. But it's just number one, during residency or in medical school, we weren't really given that much training in nutritional supplementation or just, you know, preventive medicine. And for me, I guess it's always been my passion, just because I've kind of experienced that for myself and seeing how nutrition really affected me as a whole. So it was just frustrating to be in that setting and not being able to help so many people. So yeah, that was kind of like the catalyst that really pushed me. I didn't do it earlier because I have three kids and I didn't want to do it when they were younger. And so now they're all teenagers and I figured, you know what, I have the time to devote. And so 3 years ago, that's when I kind of ventured out, and it's been amazing, honestly, just knowing that I'm helping so many people with prevention versus, you know, and there's nothing wrong with treatment either. And some people will need the end goal treatment, right? But why not try prevention and lifestyle modification first?
Yeah. So I think that's
We have a podcast out that we talked about, you know, the American model standard of care and how, you know, it's just really impossible for a patient that goes into the doctor's office who already needs critical care, because most of them are there because they're diabetics or they have high blood pressure. So they're already in critical care. And that's really what the doctor is doing, is really saving them, right? Because without that, they're not going to be able to survive. But it just misses the whole prevention. And maybe it's not the place for the doctor to do that. Maybe it's other places where you find that. And that's why, you know, professions like healthcare or like health coaches, which is where we lie, are available, because we can help people prevent from ending up in that critical care.
That's actually a really good point, because, you know, I mean, obviously there's a need for, you know, internists as well, right? Because we do cancer screenings and all these other really vital things that we do as part of our evaluation. But I agree, there's, you know, there's just like there's this lacking in preventive and mm-hmm. wellness for patients, which I think would avoid so many of these other endpoint problems. So yeah, that's the frustration. It's like you know, patients always ask me, and that's another frustrating thing, is like insurance companies don't really cover for wellness mm-hmm. measures as much, and people are always asking about insurance coverage. And you know, my answer is, unfortunately, that investment will actually save you money in the long run. But for example, like insurance companies will pay for gastric bypass surgery, but they won't pay for, you know, dietary measures or like following up with a wellness coach, for example. And to me, it's crazy, but, you know, they're not stupid in doing that. The reason why they pay for gastric bypass is because it's a one-time thing. They know that, you know, they're going to pay once and that's it. Whereas covering someone to actually go through the hard work of lifestyle modification, you know, it requires work, and it requires that person to really be self-motivated to do that. And unfortunately, that comes along with getting coached. And a lot of times you need your hand held and different assessments that go along with that. But, you know, everyone wants a quick fix, including insurance. Yeah. They don't want to pay for anything that's going to be long-term, or even, you know, not as long-term, but just requiring a little bit more effort. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that also doesn't take into consideration, if we go the easy route and get a bypass surgery, you know, what about the side effects? What about the problems that people have after surgery? Because I know that there are many. And to me, it's, you know, with those kind of problems that people may have from a gastric bypass, that does not seem the easier route. The easier route to me seems change your lifestyle, change your behaviors, you know, no risk there, no side effects. So I think you're onto that right yeah. there, that we haven't really considered that. We're going for that quick fix. I think people maybe feel that that going this route is too difficult, or for whatever reason, they find it too challenging and would rather take the risk.
No, I agree with you completely. I think, you know, having bypass surgery, it's like this instant gratification, right? Where you lose that weight right away. But then, like you said, there's so many complications down the road, so many that have nutritional deficiencies, or they get complications from the actual surgery. So, and you know, these lead to a lot of secondary issues too. So I agree, right. But we can only do so much except educate and right. work as hard
lead
as we can.
Lead a horse to water, right? Like you
yeah,
said.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, on that note, you have done some pretty amazing work in the field of weight loss. You've been a medical contributor to Hot Living Magazine, Huffington Post, Shape, Insider. Wow, I'm so impressive. So, and you're featured as Hot Living's 2020 wellness and weight loss expert in New York areas. So, wow, bells and whistles there. Congrats on all of that. I think there's a huge need still. Obviously, we still have an epidemic of obesity, and there's a lot of interest. So people aren't unaware. They are very much aware of the problem and they very much want to change it. But I think that there's so much confusion out there about different diets and, you know, people are a little bit at a loss of what to do. And I think your approach here is different than most medical doctors. So could you shed some light on your thoughts on how the gut health and microbiome affect weight loss?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like weight loss isn't just about counting calories anymore. We've done so much research and seen so many things recently that show that. And so this is why probably a lot of people are not successful in their long-term weight loss goals, is because they think that just cutting calories is going to be it. And while, yes, you do need to decrease the amount of food that you're bringing into your body, a lot of it depends really on the types of food. It's quality versus quantity. And so my goal with weight loss patients is not necessarily to cut calories, but really the number one goal is to decrease inflammation, because mm-hmm. we know that inflammation in the body hinders weight loss. And there's several factors that go into that, and I won't go into detail, but I know a lot of people know about cortisol, and cortisol is a stress hormone. And when it goes up, it hinders weight loss. And the beauty is that our body wants us to survive, and it will do whatever it needs to do to get to that survival point. So for example, when we're stressed, our body goes into this fight or flight, and part of those stressors cause elevations in cortisol. Well, cortisol causes fat to not be, you know, burned. It's a
right.
storage.
That's the right
body. Right. Our body thinks, okay, I don't know when I'm going to get my next meal. She's stressed. Let me just conserve whatever I need to do. And that's really the core of the problem. And gut inflammation is really the core of why so many patients are developing all these chronic conditions like diabetes and heart disease and obesity as well, because inflammation, again, allows your body to go into that survival mode where it's now decreasing your metabolism and not allowing you to lose the weight that you need to lose. So there are many factors that go into what I do to decrease inflammation, but that's the number one goal, is to decrease gut inflammation and then overall inflammation in your body, which then your body will relax and say, okay, she's not stressed anymore. You know, I think I can now work and function the way I'm supposed to function. So,
mm-hmm. And with regards to reducing body weight and also inflammation, is there a specific diet approach that you have, or is it broad in many ways to approach that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, I base that really on each individual, based on their medical conditions, whether or not they have autoimmune disease, and just, you know, previous factors that affected their weight loss. But what I've seen consistently is patients on diets that are called anti-inflammatory, which are similar to the Mediterranean diet or the Blue Zone diet, for example, where you're eating predominantly plant-based foods. I would say 70 or 80% of your meals should be from a plant-based source. And then intermittent fasting is another really big one that I incorporate. And personally, that's actually what's helped me lose the weight, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and maintain the weight loss. That's really one of the main drivers of weight loss. And we can talk a little bit more about how that works for weight loss, but also how that works just for overall health and, you know, immune system boosting. So,
right. I can say so, I am loving all of her stuff. She sounds a lot of like what I do with my clients. Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, I treat lectins with all those vegetables. So again, to reduce the effects of that leaky gut, to reduce inflammation and all of that. So I'm loving everything that she's saying. Everybody just take it in and do as she says.
Actually, leaky gut is the source of all evil, in my opinion.
Yeah, right?
Right?
Absolutely. I agree.
Isn't it interesting how much is connected to the gut when people don't realize it? So I have a book coming out in November, which I talk about my story that I had ulcerative colitis and used, you know, a lot of the intermittent fasting, specialized diet, inflammatory and stress management to kind of mitigate myself. But when I got down in there digging in the mire of all this research, it seems that there isn't a disease that's not connected to the gut health.
I agree with you. Absolutely. And good for you that you managed to control your ulcerative colitis. It's not a fun disease, that's for sure.
Yeah, not fun
at all. I'd love to read your book when it comes out. Please let me know.
I will. Thank you. Well, you've done so much amazing work, and I think we could go on and on about weight loss, but I think we can't skip the discussion about your paper, your research paper published about gut health and COVID. So can we dig into that a little bit?
Absolutely. And there actually is a link between that and weight loss. And you'll see why. So this is a little bit lengthy. So I'll try to be as simple as possible with this. So as I mentioned, I live in New York City. The pandemic hit us pretty early in, you know, March of 2020. So while I had a little extra time on my hands because my practice was closed, my husband was like thrust onto the front lines and like complete opposite. So, you know, not being able to just sit still, I decided that I was kind of dig in a little bit deeper as to what was going on with COVID, because we were seeing such a disparity of who was getting really sick, right, and who wasn't. And so my husband would go in, and he had, you know, at some point they had like, they normally have, I think, like 10 ICU beds in one unit. And at some point they were so overwhelmed. It was like more than 120 patients that were in the ICU, and they didn't know what to do with them. So, yeah. So he would come home and kind of tell me, you know, what they were doing with their patients. And as much as like certain things were kind of responding to their standard protocol, there were other things that they were seeing like weren't responding. And one of the things that they were checking with a lot of their really sick COVID patients in the ICU were inflammatory markers. So they were finding a lot of these patients had very high CRP, which we know is an inflammatory marker. But then they were also, it was interesting. They were also finding that a lot of these patients were responding to interleukin 6 inhibitors. So interleukin 6, and I can talk a little bit more about that. Interleukin 6 is a inflammatory marker that the immune system releases when it sees something that's an intrusion or infection to the body. And the interesting thing with that is it's similar to cortisol, actually, where so IL-6 is what it's called. IL-6 is released by the immune system. It's supposed to be a short-term like inflammatory mediator, because it works in kind of just getting all these other inflammatory responders to go to the site of whatever it seems to be the intrusion and fight it, right, with macrophages and all these really powerful tools that our immune system can use to fight off an infection. And unfortunately, what they were seeing was these patients had very, very high IL-6 levels that were getting really sick. And so they were seeing these patients with heart disease and diabetes and all the patients that we were told were high risk. But then they had the subset of patients who didn't really have any medical conditions and were younger. The only thing that was that they had was maybe like higher than normal BMIs, but not even that high. And so one day he came home and he said to me, he's like, do patients who are overweight have high IL-6 levels? And I said, yeah, they actually do, because that's an inflammatory marker. And unfortunately, with this subset of people, is it's supposed to come out only short term, right? Again, the body's survival, responds and then it disappears. But what happens in people who have, you know, gut health issues, gut inflammation, and are overweight, and on these other risk factors that I mentioned, their IL-6 levels are subclinically elevated all the time. So that's not good for the body because that signifies that they're in chronic inflammation.
Right.
So then what happens, then you get something like COVID, right? And COVID, you get infected with COVID and your body's already in this hyperinflammatory state, right? So it doesn't know what to do. It's already got the IL-6 levels are high, like all these other inflammatory markers are high. And so it kind of just doesn't know how to confine COVID and, you know, like just confine it and you know, subdue it, I guess. So it goes into this hyper-exaggerated inflammatory response. And then that actually causes more harm than good. And I don't know if you guys have heard of the cytokine storm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually initiated by IL-6 and all these other pro-inflammatory markers. So it's like this hyper-exaggerated response of the body because it can't handle the load that it's been given because it's already inflamed. So reversely, then you look at, so when he told me that, it was like the light bulb went off and I said, that's very interesting. And then we kind of talked about, I wonder why kids aren't really getting sick at all. And I was like, I know. And, you know, we know kids' guts are overall healthier than adults just because they haven't been exposed to as much, you know, garbage. So I started kind of just researching like the gut microbiome of kids and what it was that, like, you know, like was making them healthier. And so this is kind of where our discovery came. And we started noticing that kids' gut microbiomes are very different from adults. And they have a much, much higher concentration of one specific bacteria called bifidobacterium. And it's present in some kids, it's like 60 to 80% of their gut microbiome is bifidobacterium. Especially kids under 10. And the reason being is it's actually a very potent immune regulator. And it's like nature's way of allowing their adaptive immune system to thrive during that time, right? But even more interestingly, and this is where we kind of started this research. So I have two friends who are scientists and they specialize in biological molecular pathways. So I said, you know, guys, can you help me out with this? And let's research if bifidobacterium actually works on these immune pathways that, you know, they're seeing patients getting really sick with. And so lo and behold, we were kind of doing research on bifidobacterium and it's not a new, you know, it's not a new discovery. There have been so many articles on bifidobacterium and it's been studied very, very well. And it's in almost every probiotic formula for a reason. It's a beneficial, you know, bacteria. We've known this for years. And so then we started studying how it works in the body and guess what? It downregulates IL-6. Which that's one of its main functions is it downregulates IL-6, which is the same, you know, immune mediator that we're seeing is the cause of all the problems in patients who are getting really sick. Not only does it do that, but it upregulates two powerful anti-inflammatory markers, interferon and another anti-inflammatory marker called IL-10. So with the job of downregulating this pro-inflammatory marker that's causing so much problems and then upregulating these anti-inflammatory markers, this is really where I think, and you know, my colleagues also think that this might be the protective factor in children. So we published a study and, you know, bifidobacterium has been given in other studies, it's been shown to decrease incidence of asthma, eczema, influenza in the elderly. So many articles, if you Google it, I mean, it's, in my opinion, it's like the most valuable player of, you know, the COVID pandemic. It's very, very, beneficial. And when we first published our study, that was back in May, 2020, we tried to get it out there. And we kind of met with a lot of resistance. I think there was a lot of, hesitation, as to whether or not to believe this, but since our study was first published, there have been about 8 or 9 additional scientifically, you know, peer reviewed studies in big medical journals that have kind of confirmed what we initially said. I can give you just a couple of them. There was one Hong Kong study published in the British Medical Journal in January of 2021, where they actually went in and did stool gut analysis of these patients in the ICU that had severe COVID, and they found bifidobacterium to be deficient in their guts. Mm-hmm. That was one. There was another big study in Italy in September of 2020, where they gave one subset of patients like the standard COVID protocol, and then another set they gave them that standard protocol plus plus probiotics, and they found that the probiotics group had an eightfold decrease in respiratory symptoms compared to the
it's
other.
Amazing.
Group. Yeah, because that gut lung axis is also really powerful. And not one single individual in that probiotic group needed to be intubated. So, and that's just like two that I'm telling you, there's been several. So I feel like we've kind of just got some validation on that. There are always some skeptics, that say this is trivial, but I respond to them and saying, COVID is trivial. It's a tiny little virus, and look what it's done to our immune system. So would you think that, our gut microbiome, which is trillions of organisms, are not trivial.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like, what we already knew. I mean, I think there was already a lot of discussion about obesity being a major driver of severe cases. But I think this tells a little bit more of the story about what that actually breaks it down to and really makes the case for what we need to do as a society to get ourselves healthier, taking care of that gut through stress management, behavior modification, eating the right foods. I'm so happy to hear that this has been embraced, because this is what Eric and I are talking about all the time, not just for COVID, but for general disease, in all the chronic diseases that we see that seem to be tied to the microbiome. I wanted to add one other thing
because that was something also that we noticed. Obese individuals are actually more deficient in bifidobacterium than non-obese individuals. So if you look at the gut microbiome of patients with high BMIs, they actually have lower bifidobacterium levels than the normal weight population in comparison. So there's definitely a role in all of this.
Definitely a connection. Yeah. Well, to continue on with the COVID discussion, I think Erica had a couple questions, and then I'll come back with what I have.
Yeah. So I just wanted to preview all of this by saying that I'm really honored to have you on our show. As a biologist, I'm like a kid in a candy store talking to you, literally. Like this is amazing. So, and
I'm so glad that you appreciate it. Like as a biologist, because I think a lot of people are like, this is snake oil. And I'm like, but there's really a core at what we're talking about. It's not at all just, trivial.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. There's so much within us that we don't pay attention to and that is literally driving our life. And I try to say that almost every podcast. It's like, you are not you. Trust me, you are so much more than you think. So, but the research paper is completely filled with so much information. And if anybody goes and reads it, which I did, because I'm a nerd, because I want to know, right? But the one thing that you can definitely get out of this is that the presence, absence, or quantity of a bacteria have a direct effect on that severity of that COVID-19, for sure. Like you cannot, even if you don't understand how this works, out of the research paper that you can read, you can get that this bacteria in particular has a direct effect on how your body will respond to COVID. And that, to me, in my humble opinion, this paper should be the headline news on every station at the beginning of every news segment. And then maybe we could get people to start understanding and actually embracing the power that they possess at their own fingertips to influence their health outcomes through their very own personal immune system.
I love that. Personal, so, it really is. It's about empowering yourself and giving yourself the knowledge and education to change, right?
Yeah. Yep, so exactly. Why did you look at the microbiome specifically for treatment or prevention of COVID-19?
I've always just been like so passionate about the gut, like as really the core of, all other things, health-wise. And so I don't know, it was like this perfect storm of my husband being in the ICU and me being involved in weight loss. And we just had this conversation and it kind of just was like this, epiphany, but, gut health, is really the core. And, Hippocrates said this thousands of years ago and people are like, wow, what a visionary. But, probably back then they didn't really have that many medical conditions and they didn't have knowledge overload and they didn't have all these processed foods and all this garbage. So it was really easy to pinpoint. And what did he say? He said, all disease begins in the gut. And I truly believe that. And I actually truly believe that the forefront of medicine going forward in the next 5 to 10 years is going to be gut health. Gut health is exploding in so many ways, and we are finding links for, you know, gut dysbiosis to Alzheimer's, to autism, to Parkinson's disease. So many, and, you know, as I mentioned, obesity, gut health definitely plays a role in obesity. So there's, you know, to me, why not look at the gut when you're looking at COVID? I mean, the gut actually contains a large portion of your immune system too. So it just makes, you know, perfect sense to someone who's aware of that.
Absolutely. So I know that when doctors are making like organ transplants, they are administering the same hormones that we produce when we're in stress or fear in order to suspend that immune response for the patients to actually accept these organs. So I think we forget as humans how powerful all this stuff is. And recognizing that 70% of your immune system lies within your gut, definitely would say, I have to look at the gut, right, to be able to figure out what's going on. And I give you props for noting the importance of nutrition and applying that for the future of your patients and within yourself. And I definitely believe that we have to stop normalizing obesity. Obesity is a very dangerous thing to be, and we should be educating each other and everybody that we encounter to, you know, make our gut biome robust so that it can protect us, and that sometimes it doesn't lie within our mental capacity to be or not to be something, that there is something different driving it, and that we can, you know, definitely change that by even just what we eat. Literally, we don't have to inject ourselves on anything. We don't have to take a medication every day that we go out and spend $200 a month on. Literally, what we eat will change that gut microbiome. So my last question for you, Dr. Bouchard, which I always ask our guests, is because I believe that mental health is important in maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And so I like to know, what makes you laugh uncontrollably?
That's a really good question. I mean, my family, I don't know, like they're all like really funny. And so we'll sit and just kind of laugh together. I love watching funny movies. I don't know. I just really have to just kind of have a positive attitude towards life and see the good in so many things that you might not necessarily think are good. But yeah, I go out of my way to actually laugh. I try to watch really funny movies, to lighten the
mood. Stress relief.
That's great. I agree. I actually wanted to bring up a really good point based on what you mentioned, Erica, regarding what you eat and how obesity is being normalized. And I also kind of want to stress on, it really is what you eat and plant-based foods. And I'm not saying like people need to be 100% vegan, and I'm certainly not. But you bring up a really good point, and I want to mention this because there have been these cases of like very athletic, healthy males, right? Like bodybuilders that have gotten really sick from COVID. And I mean, I don't know 100% if this is the case, but a lot of times if you look at the gut microbiome of these quote unquote, like healthy looking individuals, they actually might have gut inflammation too, because they're eating predominantly protein rich diets, right? Very keto, not a lot of plant-based foods. And we really, 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 really need those prebiotic fibers in plant-based foods, because those are what help to thrive our microbiome. And those are what help to increase our bifidobacterium levels. So, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I don't know if I'll believe this, because, you know, you see this one, you hear about this one person, he, you know, was at the gym every day and looked really healthy, but looking healthy doesn't necessarily mean that your gut is healthy. I really wanted to stress on that, because again, this is a big topic, and bifidobacterium levels are higher. We know this are higher in children naturally, right? Because that's just God's way of allowing their adaptive immunity to thrive, but they're also higher in people who eat mostly plant-based diets. And actually, while we were doing our research, we came across a study that was done on Japanese and Italian centenarians. So centenarians are people who live to be 100, and their bifidobacterium levels, so these are people who are over 100, their bifidobacterium levels were actually higher than the non-centenarian elderly population that was compared to them. So there's definitely a link, to your gut and health.
And you mentioned children too. Don't breastfeeding babies have really high levels of that?
Absolutely. Really good point also, because Bifidobacterium comes in several strains, and Bifidobacterium breve is one of the strains of Bifido that has been shown to be very healthy for the gut. And it, breve is only present in breast milk. You can't get Bifidobacterium anywhere, Bifidobacterium breve in any other source other than breast milk. And there have been studies on that too, where there are short chain fatty acids that are released, and those really help with the lining of the gut and integrity of the gut lining. And that kind of just sets people up for a healthier life, you know, moving forward. So definitely any pregnant moms that are out there, and I don't want to shame anyone who hasn't breastfed, but even if you can give your baby like that first few weeks of colostrum and breast milk, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. Amazing. And I remember years ago reading about even some people using human breast milk to treat things like cancer. And in fact, I had a midwife many years ago that I pumped for because she had breast cancer.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
And she did end up passing away, but it was years later. So they gave her, you know, X months to live. And I always wonder if that, you know, was part of, you know, what that did for her. But anyway, breast milk's amazing.
Well, you didn't hurt her. That's for sure. You didn't hurt her.
You know, while we were doing our research, like we literally looked at so many different studies, and there was one study of Bifidobacterium being given to cancer patients, and those patients' IgA levels, and IgA is usually like a good marker for gut health, and their IgA levels had dropped. And so there was a link. It was a Japanese study. I remember that. So I don't know. Like I said, I just feel like I don't want to keep saying Bifidobacterium, but Bifidobacterium, in my opinion, is the MVP of the COVID pandemic. And, you know, and I want to share something interesting with you guys, because again, like people are like, it's just one bacteria, but you know, H. pylori, I don't know if you guys know the story of H. pylori and how it was discovered.
I don't know about how it was discovered. Yeah. I'm anxious to hear.
Yeah, it's a really, I mean, I just found out about it a few months ago too. So H. pylori, as we all know, is the cause of like most stomach cancers, gastritis, ulcers. You know, we know this now, but we didn't know this back in the 1980s. And interestingly enough, there was this gastroenterologist, Australian doctor named Dr. Gary Marshall, who was seeing so many patients with gastric ulcers and gastritis. And he started pinpointing it to a bacteria, and he suspected that it was one particular bacteria. And he, you know, spoke to the medical world about this, and they all mocked him. And they said, that's not possible. And he's like, well, I'm going to prove them wrong. So he had one patient where he scoped, right? So this patient had an ulcer. He got the gastric juices of that scope, right? He got some gastric juice. He drank it himself. And he was so adamant on proving his theory. He drank it himself, and he became violently ill, you know, like weeks later. And then he had his colleague scope him, and they found that he developed these gastric ulcers. And then they identified that was H. pylori. And so fast forward now, you know, 40 years later, we know that H. pylori is the cause of 90% of gastric ulcers and cancers. He ended up getting a Nobel Prize, actually. But oddly enough, like back in the 80s, like he was mocked, and nobody believed that this one bacteria could cause so many things. So that was like a negative bacteria. But I'm very convinced that Bifidobacterium is so vital. And if you guys aren't following him, like real Joel Green, he wrote a book called The Immunity Code. He talks a lot about Bifidobacterium and how he also believes it's, you know, it's a really big, like plays a big role in gut health. I just started reading his book. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Apparently I'm following him. Looks okay, great. Good. I need to go back and dig in some more.
Want to get him on your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Great
one. And you guys can cut this part out if you don't want it to, you know.
No, this is all wonderful. You know what? We try to keep these close to 30 minutes, but this information is just way too good. So I don't think anyone's going to complain. If anything, they just pause it and come back. But the beauty of a podcast. But I do want to finish off with my real quickly. What does a typical day look like for you in being mindful of your own gut health?
Good question. So for me, you know, I practice intermittent fasting, as I mentioned, and now it's just part of my life. So usually what I'll do is, for the most part, I'll only eat during a 6 to 8 hour window during the day. And so I'll usually in the morning not have anything in the morning. And then my first meal will usually be at 11 to 12. If I'm home, because some days I do telehealth and then I'm able to like be home, and some days I'm not. But usually what I'll do, my first meal will be a smoothie, and I'll put in whatever, you know, whatever I have that's really good for gut health. And I think for people starting out, it's such a good way to get in, you like your fruit and vegetable serving. So I'll give you an example of what I throw in there. So I'll do like a cup of kefir, and then I'll either have fresh fruits, like organic fruit, and I'll put in like 3 or 4 different fruits in there. But sometimes if I don't, I usually buy and stock like frozen organic fruits, and I'll throw those in there. And then I'll throw like spinach leaves in there, or I'll put a little matcha powder or spirulina. And I have my smoothie, and it's so filling. So that'll usually keep me till like maybe 2 or 3. And then I'll have like a light lunch. And then by 5 or so or 6, I'll have like a very light dinner. And I try to, so if you're going to imagine a plate, the ratio of your foods should be 70% plant-based. So that's some kind of vegetable or like legume. Like lentils are really good for helping increase your bifido levels. And I can talk about what to increase your levels with. And then, so 70% that, and then 30% other, usually will do the job. And it really keeps me full. And I think it keeps me full because when you eat plant-based fibers, think of it as you're satisfying the probiotics in your gut, and then they're happy and they're good.
Eating
and
the
they
bugs. Just
have lost that to the time, right? They just they send the signal to the brain like we're good, we don't need anything else, mm-hmm. right? Because those organisms are sending signals to our brain. That gut brain axis is also very powerful, and so yeah. if you're feeding your body with like processed foods, well, unfortunately, that's going to allow bad bacteria to thrive in your gut, and the bad bacteria just keep wanting more and more. So they shut off that loop, you know, that signal that tells your body you're full. And that's why people are always hungry when they're eating processed foods. So, and I'm not claiming to be like the perfect eater. I cheat every once in a while, as we all do, I'm sure.
We're
human. Yeah, exactly. But I think if you do this 80% of the time or more, I think your body will be able to withstand like an occasional insult here and there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do like food wise. I try to walk. So I try to follow like what the Blue Zone and the Mediterranean zones, like, because they've been studied, right? They're like the healthiest in the world, and there's a reason why. And the things that they do is, you know, we talked about that, their diet, plant-based. They eat a lot of olives or olive oil-based foods. They're very little animal protein. If they do eat animal protein, it's mainly in the form of like fish and seafood. They walk. They do at least like 30-minute walks, and they're working outdoors, which is so important. You're getting the vitamin D. But another really important aspect is social aspects and the like community. So engage with your friends, you know, have friends over. I know it's hard now with everything going on, but just try to be, you know, in social settings that make you happy, because it has been shown to really be effective in overall health.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Those are, well, that kind of leads into my last question, the final question I ask every guest. And especially today, we've just given, and you've just given so graciously, so much amazing information. What can people walk away with if you had to, you know, dumb all this down? I know that's hard to do, but if we could send people off with a couple of action items. So if we were to give, say, 3 things that people could do today to start making a difference for themselves.
Sure. Number one, drink a lot of water. Your body needs water. I mean, I would say drink 6 cups of water a day. Believe it or not, it'll make a huge difference in so many things. That's easy, right? Everyone has access to water. Number two, I would say if you're new at this, don't get overwhelmed. Just start slowly. So you can start with, you know, 1 vegetable or 2 fruit, you know, whatever, and then just work your way up. It doesn't have to go from 0 to 360. Cause I think that's overwhelming for a lot of people, yeah. right? two. Three, I would say if you're not exercising and that's daunting for you to start like an exercise routine that you feel is going to be difficult, again, just go for a 10-minute walk. It doesn't require much. Like, just make it a goal. And I think everyone has 10 minutes to spare, and then increase it. So the next week, make it 20 minutes, and then the next week, 30. And it's really all about just taking small steps and building habits. So that's really what I would say, like drink water, which is easy, and start slowly with food and with exercise. So
yeah, great tips. And so if people want to learn more about your work, we didn't even get to talk about the skin work that you do and skincare. I mean, there's on and on here with this amazing woman. So Dr. B, where can people find you?
They can either find me on Instagram or my website. My Instagram is Dr. Christine B, the doctor spelled out, and then Christine B. And my website has a lot of good resources too. It's fromwithinmedical.com. And yeah, that's it. And
okay. That's amazing. We're going to put those in the show notes. So everyone will be able to find you and more of your services. Thank you so much for your time today. This was amazing.
Thank you both. Like, I really enjoyed speaking to you both.
Thank you. This is great. We appreciate you.
All right.
All right. Bye, everyone.
All right. Bye. Take care.
Bye.